Welcome back to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. Our guests today are Paul LaChapelle and Deb Albin, who organized the 2020 Rainbows Over the Rockies Summit. There will be another summit in 2021, and we'll post Paul's email on the KGVM website so you can reach out to him with ideas for topics and speakers for this year. We'll also post a link to last year's virtual summit so you can hear the full presentations. Now let's continue our discussion with Deb and Paul about last year's summit and listen to some more clips from that event. At the end of the last half hour, we listened to three young people talk about their experiences being out in Montana, and Paul has more to say about the summit's focus on youth last year.
I'll just add, I think, you know, because we, early on when we were planning the event and thinking about an audience, a focus, a theme, we decided early on that addressing youth issues would be time well spent, and we felt that it has been something that really hadn't been addressed much, certainly at MSU, but at other universities. But we felt that it was important for youth to talk to youth, and not to just to have adults, lecturing of sorts to our audiences that whether they were trained and professionals, but we felt that having a youth focused panel to talk about empowerment and support groups that can function at schools would be a really effective way to reach youth. And as Deb said, it really was. It was a fun panel. It was you could tell that they were enjoying themselves, but also that the topic was serious. It was that there had been there were a lot of personal personal stories that were being shared during that panel. So I was just thrilled that we could offer just this whole spectrum of learning opportunities, from counselors to doctors to other professionals and parents, as we just discussed, but also to have youth talk to youth, and I think they just did a fantastic job with that.
I did too. As I said, I was really moved. So here, this goes with the, in a way, with the focus on youth. It is not spoken by a youth. However, the first recording that I clicked on was actually about being out in rural America or growing up gay in rural America. Could you describe that a little? Because this gentleman also shared personal stories, although he's not a youth at this point.
Sure, I'll speak to that. Jeff Myers was our keynote speaker on our first day, and Jeff is a former extension professional. He had worked in 4-H for most of his professional life. He's since retired, now living in Baltimore, Maryland. But Jeff offered us a humorous but also a very heartfelt conversation about his personal journey about coming out in rural and agricultural America. He showed a short film, which is accessible on our YouTube channel, which incidentally, if you Google, you can access it from our website that you had mentioned, but also you can just Google Virtual Rainbow, which is our YouTube mm-hmm. channel. But Jeff talks about this journey coming out as a gay man, and the response that his father had, and being a very conservative household, the hardship that created, the strain on their relationship, and the many years of distance that it caused. And Jeff eventually talks about coming back together, repairing that relationship with his father. But the film that he shows during his keynote is really a very powerful and personal story, and a reminder of just how difficult it is, particularly for our rural colleagues and friends that we, I think, can empathize with in a rural state like Montana. And again, wanting to kind of kick off this summit with somebody who I think was identifiable and relatable to so many youth we felt here in Montana, a different rural setting, but a rural setting nonetheless.
Let's listen to a few words from Jeff that he offered at the summit, and then we'll hear the short video he played about his journey with his family.
But we were a hardworking dairy farm family. We worked side by side, and we worked hard, very, very hard. We started working at the barn at least by age 6. You started by feeding calves and bringing the cows in. You got paid your whopping 25 cents a month. But as a 6-year-old, that seemed like a lot of money. We were church-going people. We were a conservative community.
Everybody's journey is very different. My father, one day, it was the Monday after Memorial Day, parked in the driveway. I could tell by his gait as he walked into the house that he was not a happy camper. He came in and sat down in this very rocker. He proceeded to tell me what an embarrassment I was to him and my mom, what an embarrassment I was to my siblings, to my nieces, my nephews. And really the dagger that he knew cut into me was telling me that I was an embarrassment to the memory of my grandparents. He literally screamed at me, "How could I be so stupid? How could I possibly be his son?" Once he asked the question, "Are you gay?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And when he got up from this chair, he walked out of the house, and that was a real turning point.
My father came in probably every single day to the farm. And if I was outside either gardening or working in the yard or just happened to be outside, he would look straight forward, head down the lane, and never acknowledge I was alive. It was 5 years later when we finally had our second real interchange about the entire conversation. He turned to me and he said, "Well, as far as I'm concerned," he goes, "you're nothing but a potential murderer." And then it took another 5 years before we really reached a resolution.
My mom's journey was really quite different. We sat in the kitchen and we talked about it, and she cried through most of it. But instead of blaming me for any of it, she owned every bit of it. Because my mother thought and said she was a horrible mother, that God didn't like her, that she had been a bad Christian, and that was why I ended up being gay. It was very difficult to watch that almost every single day she was in a house coat. But as opposed to my dad, who never would speak to me and certainly couldn't speak about it, my mother and I would talk on a regular basis.
The fact that I was here, we were able to talk about it, I think helped her immensely on her journey.
Over the years, she did begin to come around a little bit. As I sang with the gay and lesbian chorus in Baltimore, she would come to hear us sing. And I remember the first time ever watching her in that congregation, and she was so uncomfortable and in so much pain, but I was so proud. Upon being invited to my brother and his partners for a garden party, my mother had came to ask whether I might take her to there, and having offered her,
my father insisted that his role as her husband would be to take her to that party.
She basically forced his hand and said, "Well, if you're going to take me, you have to do one thing first, and that's go down and apologize to Jeff." And interestingly enough, back in that rocker in the kitchen, we sat for 45 minutes talking about my journey and his journey. Once he let that wall go, he was able to go ahead and be much more open, truly being able to be supportive in his way. And that really is what it's all about.
Whether it's accepting ourselves or other people accepting who we are, we all each are on our own journey. And it really can't be accelerated. It can't be fast-tracked. It's really about each of us in our own discovery, taking our time to find our way and allowing that person the grace and the openness to take their journey on their own.
Well, I'll ask also about someone who is a younger person, Jericho Cummings, who's an, as I understand it, an MSU student who spoke on a hate crimes bill. Could you talk a little bit about that presentation and about them?
Sure. I'll talk a little bit about Jericho. I first saw Jericho's presentation. He did it a couple of months prior to our summit at another diversity summit at Montana State University. And I was just absolutely blown away by his passion for the subject. It was part of, I believe, his senior thesis. He did graduate the spring that we did the summit. And he was just so giving about his Native American heritage and talking quite a bit about that. He has a wonderful interlude in his presentation. If you go to the YouTube channel and watch it, about halfway through, he talks really lovingly about the two-spirit identity within the Native American people. And we were just so happy to have him give us this this viewpoint. And also, one of the things we told you earlier was he was gracious enough to do our land acknowledgement at the beginning of the program. And he did an absolutely wonderful job with that. But just a lovely young person who is so proud of his heritage and just cannot wait to get out in the world and mix it up and talk to people about all of his identities. And he was just a really wonderful person to have as part of the summit.
Dr. Nurse Nancy, I wanted to also say this earlier, but we had over 30 presenters over the course of the 3 days, and not all of them were recorded. We respected the wishes of some of our presenters who asked that we not record their presentations. But I just wanted to say, with all of our 30 plus presenters, the parents, the youth, if we don't get the pronouns correctly with some of the individuals that we're talking about, we mean no offense, and we've done our best to acknowledge the pronouns that our presenters had requested, but we don't have all of that information right at our fingertips.
Sure. This is Body Politic. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. At the beginning of the show, I explained what the letters in LGBTQIA mean, and I neglected to say that T can stand for transgender and also for two-spirit. We're all learning, right? Now, let's hear from Jericho Cummings.
And on July 8th, sorry, let me move this, of 2019, the Oglala Sioux tribe became the first in the state to pass a same-sex marriage law. That was because Muffy and Philippa, two individuals who grew up on the Pine Ridge Reservation, wanted to get married in their home community in 2015 when the ban on same-sex marriage was lifted. They went to their tribal leaders in hopes to get, their governmental leaders to get the marriage license signed. And in that moment, found out that their tribe did not recognize same-sex marriage and kind of upheld that union being between a man and a woman. Unfortunately, the two had to get married outside of their tribal community, which I think has a lot of other social repercussions that I will touch on a little bit later. But this couple basically went around the state to all the various reservations, talking to tribal leaders to get support for a same-sex marriage law to be passed. And, they talked with their tribal leaders about that specifically. And it wasn't necessarily met with a lot of support, specifically by other individuals in their community, because everyone has to vote in favor for this. But after championing and getting this written into law, the couple wanted to further their activist efforts and create a hate crime law protecting the LGBTQ+ citizens of the Pine Ridge Reservation because of experiences with harassment and discrimination that they had faced from their fellow tribal members and citizens. And basically the hate crime law was modeled after Matthew Shepard and James Baird Jr. Hate Crimes Protection Act of 2009. But it also, they were met with several roadblocks, just like they were trying to get the same-sex marriage law passed, and primarily from citizens of the of their tribe and of their reservation. So with that, when they went around to the various tribal leaders in the state, trying to gain support for this, there had to be a vote, basically, on opting into this hate crime law. And in the process, a lot of citizens, specifically on the Pine Ridge Reservation, wanted to rule back the same-sex marriage law and basically do away with the progress of the hate crime law as well as the same-sex marriage law. And ultimately, that decision was left up to the tribal leader to vote in favor of. And you all can do a little bit of research. I can't remember if it's Indian Country Today or another sort of like a news article format. But basically, there was an exchange from a citizen of the tribe that lived on the reservation as well, who basically had said that just like a lot of very horrific and demeaning things, and basically cited the Bible and that the tribe would get their land taken away if this law were to pass, which is very controversial, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm bashing Christianity. Because the tribal leader had actually appreciated the woman's knowledge and insight of the Christian faith and of the Bible, but his decision rested on saying that we have been Lakota since time immemorial and before the Bible was brought to our people, and I want to uphold our tradition. So going back to the traditional gender systems and the ways in which individuals would engage in same-sex romantic or sexual unions, interactions, relationships, things of that nature, and viewed this hate crime law as a way to champion like their self-determination, their sovereignty, as well as basically saying to the youth like that, if you identify as such, like you have a valued place in our community and we want to continuously protect you. And also just with like adults as well. But the final resting decision of the tribal leader specifically, he references protecting youth. So in the hate crime law, harassment, assault, and discrimination are listed as instances where they can seek out protection. And protection kind of looks like those folks enacting assault, harassment, or discrimination will either serve a year in jail time, a fine, or have to pay restitution. And I haven't seen anything about like how successful this system has been, because the law was passed very early on in September, and there hasn't been much talk about it since. What I do know is that this is very important in terms of sovereignty, self-determination, as well as representation of Indigenous queer bodies and the Indigenous queer experience, because a lot of times folks forget that this is a part of our history that has been silenced and kind of like swept under the rug for specific reasons. And I view those being like racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, X, Y, and Z. But not only creating this law, but also passing the same-sex marriage law specifically on this reservation is important because there is a high number or high rate of suicide amongst Indigenous communities and then also on this reservation. And I don't want to say that all of them are because of the lack of support of being someone of the LGBTQ plus like identity grouping, but there is a lot of discourse and thought specifically like in queer spaces that you have to leave like your small rural like hometown and go to a city and find acceptance. And I think that creating this hate crime law as well as recognizing same-sex unions will hopefully decrease that bit of specifically like the youth wanting to leave their home environments, their home communities in search of a more inclusive environment. My hope is that it not only will help decrease like suicide rates as well as like bullying and harassment, homophobia, transphobia, the whole gamut, but that it will also help serve and support like tribal government and legal services and systems that apply not only to the Pine Ridge Reservation, but the rest of the state of South Dakota and across Turtle Island. Like I think I heard last that there was one other tribe that was going to opt into a similar hate crime law. And that wouldn't have been, I think that work wouldn't have been done if Muffy and Philippa hadn't been so determined and dedicated to fight for support, recognition, as well as, what's the word that I'm looking for? Protection.
This is Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman. We're talking with Paul LaChapelle and Deb Albin about the Rainbows Over the Rockies summits, including their leadership awards.
In terms of the awardees, I mentioned that we, through our 34 summit partners, we were able to raise in the vicinity of about $14,000. And most of those funds we provided back to different youth projects across the country. And we funded 14 different youth projects. And some were, I'd say about half of them were right here in Montana, and the other half were in states outside of Montana, different youth projects. But some of the ones that we'd love to highlight are right here in our own Gallatin Valley. We funded the Bozeman High School Sexuality and Gender Alliance group, and they have been trying to amplify LGBTQ plus voices in their school. You're likely aware of some of the press that they've received over the course of the last few months. But one of the things that they've been wanting to promote is, in addition to the outreach work that they've been doing in their high school, is hosting bigger, better dances. And what they want to do is have a prom at the end of the year for inviting youth from all across Montana to join in a prom night to celebrate solidarity for any youth that identify or want to celebrate with their fellow LGBTQ plus friends.
Wonderful.
So that was one that we really felt was special and wanted to highlight.
Please go to the website and see these amazing just organizations and teams. And one of the things we did, there were a few that don't work with youth, but for the most part, I would say 90% of the organizations that we were able to award funds to do work with youth, which was kind of in line with these leadership in action. We wanted to really highlight youth that are really trying to make a difference in their communities.
Wonderful.
And we hope, sorry, I'm just saying, we hope we can do the same thing this year. We would really love to be able to do that.
Yeah. So let's talk about what are your hopes for 2021?
Well, we need to raise some money so that we can give it away. so that's kind of one of the things on our agenda, is to go to our funders and ask them to once again help us to really put some resources out into the community. That's what this whole thing is not just the presentations that we can do, but to send people off with ideas and excitement to go off and work in their communities to do just these wonderful things that they've been doing. And so we hope that we can do that again in 2021.
I'll also mention, we, you know, as with last year, our planning committee is open. It's meant to be diverse and transparent. We have a listserv for our planning committee. We also have a listserv of all our past registrants from last year. So we've kind of built the infrastructure, as it were, and there's a bit of a buzz. There's some excitement now with all of our partners that were on board last year, and some great ideas coming out this year for sessions. So, you know, we're looking at not just focusing on youth, but having perhaps an elderly track, looking at Indigenous issues in more detail, looking at how COVID-19 is affecting our LGBTQ plus friends. Again, we're anticipating that this year's will be virtual, and we'll market this with the support of our friends at Utah State University. The Western Rural Development Center have already provided some funding. So there's already this, you know, this, I think this excitement from what was offered last year, and kind of an all hands on deck approach. But we welcome ideas, we welcome input and involvement from really anyone. So please get a hold of myself, and I can put any interested volunteers, funders, partners, organizations in touch with our planning committee, so we can work to make this the most inclusive Rainbows Over the Rockies summit to date.
And just to make it easier for people to reach you, we will put your email address up, Paul, on the KGVM website. But for folks listening, it's his email address is paul.lachapelle@montana.edu. And La Chapelle is spelled LACHAPELLE. So you can reach out to Paul. Paul and Deb, I want to thank both of you so much for being with us. I'm so happy that we will be able to play some of last year's presentations for our listeners. I look forward to the upcoming 2021 Rainbows Over the Rockies. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
It was lovely. Absolutely.
We've been talking with Paul LaChapelle and Deb Albin about Rainbows Over the Rockies. You can hear our show, Body Politic, on the first and third Monday of every month at 1 p.m. on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM, or you can stream the show live. Shows are also available anytime at kgvm.org. Thank you for listening.